Welcome to Some Context Please, brought to you by the team at Foundry Creative School. The concept behind this podcast is to draw some contextual lines between what our students are learning and the professional industry. A testing ground, if you like, working out if our curriculum really measures up to what's needed in the workplace. Whether you're a student of Foundry or just an interested listener, it's our hope you're able to get a unique insight into the creative industries and the people within it. I'm your host, Adam Grieve, and this is the final episode in a season of 7 where we've explored interior design. It's the ending of the season, but also a great chance to get a little more understanding around what someone could expect moving into a new career in the industry. Matt Leach is talking to Andrew Jones, a freelance designer based in Launceston, specializing in exhibition, interior, branded space, and 3D visualizations. Andrew's had an amazing career over 30 years, working across the whole east coast of Australia from Brisbane to Melbourne and starting off in Hobart. He's particularly known for his joinery and fittings and especially recognised for his exhibit design. Matt and I were interested to talk to Andrew to get his take on what he would do if he were a graduating student these days, or even just toying with the idea of a career change. How would he find a job? What would he put in his portfolio? And what sort of advice he'd have for you when going out there to find your first work? You might be looking for that perfect entry-level role, either locally or in a state, or, on the other hand, thinking of starting up something on your own in a freelance business, working with multiple studios or clients. Whatever it is, Andrew has some great advice for you on how you might set yourself up and start looking. I hope you enjoy this one.
So let's jump straight in. And I guess the first question I really want to ask you is, like, if you were a graduate today, how would you go about finding work in a studio?
I mean, it's obvious to look at, you know, various sites where people can sort of access positions that might be vacant, but that's probably might be slim pickings for, you know, a lot of young students or designers or graduates that are getting out there to their first job.
Yeah, you're right. There seems to be all about being in the right place in the right time. In Australia, there is a lot of recruitment websites or job websites. But it's about having the right search terms to find the interior design roles, because there's not really a specific interior design recruitment or job site kind of existing here. So with that in mind, how would you, I guess, look for the job or research?
I would tend to do a bit of research on some companies that I think I might be well placed to go into. Get my folio right up to scratch, look at the sort of work that that company might do, try and tailor my folio to that.
All right, so more like a kind of cherry picking, you know, your favorite kind of studios and seeing what they do and whether that kind of aligns. So how would you, I mean, you just hit them up for a job?
And maybe even approach them on a basis of potentially doing an internship, try and get some of that base level sort of experience as quickly as you can. And even though that may or may not be a very lucrative option, it would probably put you in very good stead, I think, for either work at that particular company if there's something available, or for other companies that might be looking as well.
If you look at some of the ads that are online, they're often asking for like 2 to 3 years experience.
That's right.
If you've done a diploma or a degree where you've done that for 2 to 3 years, do you think you can count that, or do you think they're really looking for like actually in a studio?
I think probably a lot would be looking at in studio experience.
It feels like a real catch 22 situation, doesn't it? Because you've got to have experience to get the experience.
Look, I think Foundry's grounding for students is a great one, because they've got direct access to industry professionals and mentors, and I think that will go a long way for prospective employers. But I think trying to get that direct sort of knowledge that you'll only get working in a studio is really, really priceless.
Right, right. And that's why you're talking about the internship is a good way to kind of get your foot in the door. I do really like that way of thinking. I mean, if I think about my first time out in an internship sort of role, it was really amazing because, like, you've been learning all this stuff at school, but then actually seeing it in context and actually, I guess, also having that, what's the way I would put it, an axe hanging over your head, because if you didn't do the right job, you're probably out the door, as opposed to college where, you know, you had a chance to kind of make a lot of mistakes.
Yeah, that's right. And it's not just about learning design. It's about learning how to get on with other colleagues and how to interact. So there's a whole different sort of molding, process that you can only get really by going through a studio at some stage anyway.
I completely agree with this. Just even little things like, you know, what time to go at lunch or where to go at lunch or how to act in, you know, kind of all staff meetings, all those little things are just so important for kind of, I guess, understanding the role of the job, the industry as a whole. Now, you're in Tasmania now, but you've worked all over the East Coast. So I was interested whether, do you think there's a different graduate journey in Tasmania than there is in the rest of Australia?
Yeah, look, probably the best way to answer that is, I guess, in working for a company, say, in one of the major cities like Sydney or Melbourne, you're getting exposed to probably different types of projects, maybe bigger projects or more exclusive projects, simply because that's where some of those blue chip companies are based. So Tasmania, there aren't as many or here or to that extent. Tasmania's experience is probably a little bit different and maybe a little bit more intimate. There's smaller companies that you may be working for. Maybe your even learning process might be a little quicker in some ways. You won't be getting stuck on a fairly mundane project like a stair detailing for 3 months, which is quite common with some of the bigger companies in Melbourne, Sydney. So you'd be exposed to lots of smaller projects maybe. And that's a great grounding, I think.
Yeah. And not to make it all about me, although whenever someone says that, it's always about them. if I think back to when I left college and my first job and working in Sydney and, you know, a really big place, and it was very exciting. But, you know, the first job I got was like, it took 8 months to do. And I guess it was so different than college, which because it was, you know, so quick, big turnarounds, and then suddenly I was, you know, with this really big job. So I guess you're right. Having that kind of more intimate, smaller jobs, smaller clients is actually a nicer way to, I guess, introduce yourself to the industry.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I'd like to find out a little bit more about, I guess, what to expect from the interview, because I know that was a nerve-wracking thing for me when I first came out of college. But what would you suggest that they should expect from an interview?
Yeah, look, I would say, and I've been in a position where I've been a design department head. So I have interviewed a lot of students over the years and professionals through all different expertise levels. And I guess one thing that I would say is your design or creative talents and abilities would probably go for maybe 50% weighting.
Only 50%.
If I was going to be employing someone, there's so many other attributes as to whether you're a good fit for that company.
Oh, right. Okay. How do you prepare for that? How do you know what the company culture is going to be like?
Really, it comes down to going into an interview, being yourself. I mean, that's an easy kind of throwaway line, but it's still really relevant. Your communication skills, your resourcefulness, reliable. I've had employees over the years who come late to work and take long breaks and et cetera, et cetera. So that gets noted, and that can sort of rub not only maybe your direct boss, but other team members the wrong way as well. So that all sort of comes into play. You know, being engaging as a young designer in a company and being involved, being fearful of putting out an idea that someone might, dispose of pretty quickly. I think most places will understand that you're coming from a background of maybe limited knowledge in what they do. So they're expecting you to learn, and you have to be prepared to learn, I guess. And as I say, you won't be dealing with the big projects or the big clients straight away. You'll be starting at those lower level projects, and everybody has to do that. That's just a fact of life. So
I think what you said before was really good, just about that idea of, you know, do your research about the company and kind of know what work they do. And I love that idea about, ask questions, be curious.
Yeah, exactly. And you've got to consider that when an employer puts on a new employee, that's quite an undertaking for them. They don't want to put on the wrong sort of personality or the wrong team member. I know when I was employing people, I wanted a really cross-section of team. So different influences, different backgrounds, and so that everyone can contribute maybe a different perspective. I sort of think of design sometimes as a big ball of putty on the table. Yeah. And it can be molded and pushed and pressed in different ways depending on different people's perspectives and input. So I think it's really important that you're a good fit for the company, and in vice versa to a certain degree too, that they're a good fit for you.
That's a really good point. So say you get the interview, what sort of stuff should you be showing in a portfolio?
Yeah, look, it probably comes back to maybe a comment I made earlier, and really do your due diligence for that company. Do your research, put in your portfolio relevant works that are suited to the position that you're going for, but maybe try and tailor them to that company as well. So yeah, that means, you know, perhaps personalising every potential application that you do for a company, but I think that will see you in good stead for that particular position. Look, I think probably also show some diversity in your folio as well to a small degree. I think a lot of employers, yes, they want to see what you can do for them for that role, but what you may also be able to pull in from different areas. So if you're strong in, if you're, say, going for an interior design position, but you've got a strong background in graphics or an interest in graphics or an interest in furniture design, then throw a little bit of that into the mix as well. Not too much, but, you know, just a proportionate response.
Exactly what you said is so important. And I would probably add to that, just make sure there's stuff that you like to do as well in the portfolio. And if I think, again, back to my career, I had a whole bunch of sort of Photoshop rendering stuff in there, which I could do, I didn't really like doing, but then that's kind of why I got my first job. And then I was like, you know, for months just doing Photoshop rendering and thinking, oh my God, why did I get it? but I basically had it in the portfolio. So they're like, oh, he clearly likes this.
Yeah. But, yeah. Well, I think if, especially in Tasmania, where you're expected to be kind of a jack of all trades in some respects, yep. Because of just the nature of the size of Tasmania. Having said that, I mean, the projects that I work on now are mostly Sydney-Brisbane based. But if you're trying to get a position in a studio in Tasmania, you're going to have to throw on a lot of different hats at different times. So if you can pull something in that is a personal interest of yours that you excel at, that adds to that capability of that team, then certainly do it.
Yeah, fantastic. I'm thinking about IP. And I know IP and interior design is quite a strange area, because there's certain things you can kind of copyright and certain things you can't, which is quite different to, say, some of the other creative industries where it's a little bit more straight and narrow. Is there anything you should be worried about or anything you should do to sort of protect your IP in a portfolio?
Look, I wouldn't be overly concerned with it from a student perspective. I guess one thing that I would say is watermark, watermark, watermark. I mean, it's a very visual industry, and you're going to be showing predominantly visual aspects of your folio. So yeah, yep. If you're worried about that watermark, but I guess it comes down to the integrity of the company that you're proposing yourself to. But yeah, it wouldn't be a major concern of mine, I don't think.
What do you do for your clients? Is there areas of your presentations you copyright or?
Yeah, look, I've got some fairly steady and reliable clients. So it's not a major concern of mine, and they're sort of return clients. So I've got to know them quite well, even though there's some of them that I've not actually met face to face yet, being interstate, and that's the world we sort of live in now.
Yes.
But, yeah, look, if it's a new client, then I guess there's, you know, certain questions that you may be able to ask to kind of gauge where you fit in their little sphere, and if you're worried about that. It's probably not something that you want to push too far, because you may sort of can quite easily get someone offside.
Quite a few interior designers I've spoken to say they just put like the C symbol on their drawings, even if it's not really copyrightable. It's just just shows that someone has worked hard on this and wants to retain the intellectual property.
Yeah, that's right. And say, as it comes down to probably the integrity of the person that you're dealing with or the company that you're dealing with, I do the same thing. Say that it's, you can't reproduce or copy the idea or intent or visual of what I'm doing without prior written consent. I don't think in 30 years I've ever received a request for anyone to actually request them copying anything. So is that, I guess the question is it worthwhile doing? Look, yes, it's worthwhile putting something on there, and you'd like to hope that people can respect that aspect.
Yeah, that's great. Salary-wise, what sort of salary should a graduate probably expect? I'm putting this around that horrible question that eventually get asked, like, what sort of money are you looking for? Which is a question I always hated because I was like, oh, I don't know.
I was probably the same. It's not something that I like asking. I'd like to be asked either. And it's been a while since I've been in that position too. Look, there's various sort of sites out there. I think that you can get a gauge or some sort of spectrum of where you might fit. I guess from an employer's point of view, they would be looking at what you can bring to the company, where you might fit with other employees in their salary packages and what they might propose to you. Look, I guess what I would say is if you're in the creative industries, you're probably in the creative industry a reason that sort of supersedes trying to obtain a big salary, certainly initially. If you wanted to go in for the money, then you probably should have gone into finance or law or something like that. Certainly initially in your career anyway. But look, I would say don't shoot for the stars too quickly when it comes to salary in creative industry. You really need that grounding and then finding your little niche. I think design, whether it be interior design, graphic design, or some of the creative industries are niche industries as it is. If you can get in there and find a niche within a niche, then you kind of make yourself almost indisposable or very approachable for an employer. So try and get that first, and then I guess it is a case of working your way up to some degree, but employers would be kind of put off right at the start if you aim too high, I guess is what I'd be saying.
Yeah, absolutely. Say that you've had the interview and it all seems to be going well. I know in a lot of the other industries, creative industries, they suggest you kind of leave something behind, like something to say, don't forget about me, which may have been a business card or a postcard. And I guess all that feels a little bit old hat now, a bit antiquated, I guess. Is there anything you would suggest that, like if someone was coming to an interview with you, that you would appreciate sort of them kind of leaving as a reminder of who they were?
Yeah, look, I actually don't mind that postcard idea. I think in this age where we are of electronic emails, et cetera, I mean, that if you are in a position to forward an email later on after the interview to a relevant person, that's great. But I actually don't mind that idea of actually leaving something tangible. I remember doing a project many years ago now, it probably goes back 15 years ago, for a pharmaceutical company, and I got a nice little thank you afterwards for the project, which was like an origami folded paper thank you, which kind of folded out in this really amazing shape. And I still remember that 15 years ago. So if you can tailor something that is uniquely you as a thank you without going overboard, you don't want to overcook the whole situation. But if you can think of something that is, quite uniquely you, you'll be remembered. And even if you're not successful in that particular instance, you may be remembered for a project or a position that may come 6 months later. Or don't discount coming second in an interview, I guess is what I'm saying too.
And just like that, we are done and dusted with this episode and this season where we've been looking at interior design. Thank you so much to Matt Leach, Nikki Davey, Kirsty Marte, Andrew Francis and Andrew Jones for giving up their time to talk to us. As I said way back at the beginning, we are incredibly lucky to be able to sit down with people of their stature and ask all the dumb questions. As I've said many times before, if you like or appreciate what you've heard from them, please reach out to them via LinkedIn or socials and show your thanks. I know they would really appreciate hearing from you and knowing that their answers helped you in some way. Finally, I need to thank you, the listener. It's been a real pleasure to do this season, and I hope it's been just as good for you to listen to. The next season of Some Context Please will be focusing on another part of the creative industries, with new guests and a new curriculum to talk about. I hope you come back for that one. Some Context Please is produced by Foundry and executive produced by me, Adam Gree. If you want to get in touch with the show, you can DM Foundry on Instagram at @myfoundrylife. Foundry is an Australian creative school designed to bridge the gap between education and industry. We work with top creative leaders from all creative disciplines to design courses that help you find your passion and turn it into your career. To find out more about Foundry's current courses and upcoming intakes, visit foundry.com.au.